Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey fam friends, hey, support for today's episode comes from True Classic. This brand new sponsor has the absolute best fitting t-shirts a man could buy. So if we look at most t-shirts, they're way too tight in the wrong areas, right? So they're tight on your stomach or they're big and boxy, they just don't fit well. But these True Classic tees, they taper off toward the bottom, they fit tight around the chest, the shoulders, the arms, and really, they show off your greatest attributes. So if you're wearing a t-shirt, you want to be able to throw it on confidently, right? These are the type of shirts that you'll choose to wear every single day. And they don't just stop with shirts. True Classic also has shorts, joggers, underwear, socks, hats. This is a man's brand. So for me, I teach PE, I coach, I'm a fitness coach. So I typically wear t-shirts and joggers or t-shirts and shorts every single day. Because of that, I always want my t-shirts to look good. I'm extremely picky about the way they fit and the way they feel. These shirts also feel amazing. They're the softest shirts that you're gonna find. So if you're a t-shirt person, or for you, maybe it's just on the weekends, right? You're gonna throw on a t-shirt, go to trueclassic.com and check out their shirts. And for a limited time, you can use the code COACHP25, that's COACHP25, to get a 25% discount. And for any of the big guys out there, right? So if you're big and tall, if you are, you know, maybe you're a big lineman in football, okay, and I have some friends that are that way, they have sizes that are all the way up to triple X, they have long tees, so these shirts are really for anybody. If you're short and muscular, if you're big and tall, this is the shirt for you. And here's one of the really cool things, man, one of my favorite things about this company. True Classic donates over 40,000 shirts per month to homeless shelters, schools, and to local communities. I always want to back somebody who has a stronger mission and purpose. So good clothing, good t-shirts with a strong purpose. TrueClassic.com. Use the code COACHP25. All right, let's get back to the show. All right. Hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective. I am pumped. I have Randy Hetrick on here. So I want to go back real quick because this is a guy that I've looked up to for a long time. It's a guy I've used his systems and products for a long time. So getting him on the podcast is huge. So a little bit about, you know, his background. I'll have him expand upon that later. But Randy is a former college athlete, a Navy SEAL officer for a number of years. And then where most of us probably know him from, he is the founder of TRX. If you're in the workout world, you know what TRX is. If not, and you have a gym membership, you've probably seen the black and yellow straps hanging off the pull-up bars. And that's TRX. It's huge. I've trained on it for a long time. So Randy, thank you for being on here.
Yeah, Chad, my pleasure. I'm happy to be on and looking forward to chatting with you about all the cool stuff you're doing.
Yeah. Well, let's start here. You know, your backgrounds. Where'd you grow up at? And then I know you're an athlete. So tell us a little bit about your sports backgrounds.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in California, went to high school in Huntington Beach, was a wrestler, a decent wrestler, but I was it's funny. I was one of those kids that was, I would say double handicapped by age. I was young for my year in school. And then I was also kind of a slow bloomer for my actual age, right? So I kind of got the double whammy. So I was a big old, 6 feet tall wrestling, 157 my senior year. So I was a spider monkey and had to learn how to use leverage and length because I couldn't, I certainly couldn't go lock up with some ball that was a foot shorter than me. And so I was a wrestler through high school. And then I went to college up in USC, University of Southern California. And when I was there, got interested in rowing, ended up joining the rowing team, and you know, crewed for my most of my time at SC. And that was another great sport. Turns out, like, the best, you know, three of the best five sports for success at getting through the SEAL teams, right, were all kind of part of my early days. The wrestling is very highly correlated to success during SEAL training, and so is rowing. And then swimming was the other thing that I did growing up in Huntington Beach, right? I was very comfortable. I was a body surfer. I never really was a surfer. I became a surfer later in life. I was never a surfer because I was too busy with sports. And but I used to spend a lot of time down on the beach in the water as a body surfer. And turned out, again, another, you know, really highly correlated activity for success in SEAL training is, you know, long distance swimming, comfort in the water. So it's funny because when you look at those sports from a distance, they all have a similar characteristic. They, you know, long distance swimming, long distance running is another sport that does well, tends to do well in buds. But wrestling and rowing are these two sports that are hard as hell. They're just grinder sports, right? And nobody really gives a damn about them from the perspective of the crowd. Like, you're lucky if anybody even shows up, right? And so those sports, I think, tend to do really well in buds because they're not, you know, the sport that does the least well, football. And it's not that football players aren't tough. They certainly are, but it's a different mentality, right? It's short periods of ferocious output followed by long periods of applause. Whereas if you look at wrestling, you look at rowing, those are just these grinder sports that there is no applause, right? There's very little applause till you get up to the highest levels of the sport. Nobody even pays attention. So there's a certain mental framework that athletes in those kind of sports have that they're internally motivated, right? They don't need as much external motivation and they get really comfortable with pain and suffering. And so so I didn't realize it as I was coming up, but I was kind of curating a very, like, optimized background for what I decided to do. About my junior year in college, I got, you know, it was the Reagan Revolution, right? And being, you know, serving the country was coming back into vogue. And I got sort of fascinated. You know, I came from a long line of military folks in my family. And as you and I were talking before we started recording, you know, my dad's whole side all came from Topeka, Kansas, where you are. And, you know, it was a long line of folks that had served in World War II. And then prior to that, in the cavalry, you know, the American cavalry, as the West was being won. And so I had that in my mind. And I just decided, you know, around my junior year in college, I got fascinated with the idea of service to the country. And with testing myself, right? Because a lot of guys right around that age start having that question of, like, hey, what's it about to be a man? You know, what's my capacity? How tough am I really? Or how good am I? And those ideas kind of converged. And I ended up deciding I wanted to be a Navy SEAL. And that was, you know, no mean task to get into. But that led me into a 14-year career as a SEAL team officer. And, you know, literally one of the best things I ever did in my life.
Yeah, that's amazing how the entire background came together. And, you know, we look back over our life, hindsight's 20/20. We have no idea in the midst of those things, you know, what we're preparing for. Okay, so whenever you very first joined the military, did you have this idea like, hey, I want to try to be a SEAL, I want to be spec ops, or what was your thought process there?
Well, in retrospect, it's kind of ridiculous, honestly, because I didn't know anything. You know, the SEALs have gotten a lot of publicity, obviously, you know, especially since 9/11, but even a little bit before that. But if you go back to when I was coming in, so I was looking at it around 1986, 1987, nobody knew what a SEAL was. SEALs had zero notoriety. That's how they wanted it. They had been, you know, really a kind of a clandestine direct action force since Vietnam. And, And I'd never even heard of the SEAL teams. I thought when I started getting interested, I thought I wanted to be a Green Beret because, you know, I'd seen John Wayne and the Green Berets. And then my stepdad was a Marine platoon commander in Vietnam. So I'd been kind of raised, you know, to the Marine Corps. And so I thought, all right, well, I'm either going to go into the Army and be a Green Beret, or I'm going to go be a Marine. And that was kind of where I started. But the funniest thing is I just developed this idea in my head, and I don't recommend this approach to life to your listeners, by the way, but, you know, I just decided, you know what, I want to do whatever I'm going to serve, right? So whatever program I choose, I want it to be the hardest program to get into in the U.S. military. I want the highest attrition rate was specifically what I was looking for. The program with the highest failure rate in the initial selection. And that, you know, led me down this path that pretty quickly got me to the SEAL teams because, you know, about 15% of, and it, ironically, it's still, despite all the efforts to increase the number of successful candidates, it seems to settle out at about 15% of the class that you classed up with graduates. Now, more than that graduate eventually, because as guys get injured, as long as somebody, you know, was performing the right way, they were hitting the standards, they had the right attitude. Hey, if somebody develops, you know, break their leg, the teams don't kick them out. They just roll them back to the beginning of the phase that they were in of training when they got injured. So the numbers are a little bit misleading in that, you know, you'll hear 15% of guys that go show up to Buds graduate. That's true. More than that graduate eventually, but about 15% graduate with their class. Fortunately for me, I was one of those, but that's how I picked it. You know, you talk about dumb ideas. I'm going to go take on the thing that with the least chance of success, but that's the truth of the matter. Back then, that's kind of what I was after. And man, did I get it.
Yeah. Well, I love that mindset, you know, just right out the gate, challenging yourself to like you said earlier, you know, at that age, kind of see what you're made of and see what you can do. And, you know, as I've been blessed to interview a lot of what I would call high achievers in various areas. And, you know, they all seem to kind of have that mindset like, hey, I'm going to go after something big. And sometimes they achieve it. Sometimes they don't, but it led to something else. But usually, you know, it was this internal thing that allowed them to be able to get there, you know, eventually. So, all right, well, let's look at the genesis of TRX. Okay. So starting off just for the listeners a little bit. So this is a suspension trainer, and I'll let you, you know, explain the whole thing a little more, but you literally added a new modality of training. Like, so when I think about strength conditioning, which is a great passion of mine, you know, we have barbells, we have dumbbells, kettlebells have really started to become, you know, super popular here in America. So those are kind of like barbell, dumbbell, and now kettlebells, and then body weight training. Those are sort of the basics. That's what you do for strength conditioning. So to add like a whole new modality that's become like a basic part of our training is just sort of a crazy idea to me. So tell me about the genesis of TRX.
Yeah, well, TRX was a complete accident. It, you know, I frankly thought I was going to do, you know, 20, 30 years in the SEAL teams, and then retire and, you know, and maybe do something else. I'd always had kind of an entrepreneurial streak, or I had a MacGyver streak, right? And I don't know if MacGyver's still around, but, you know, the idea of like being very resourceful with seeing a problem and coming up with a solution to it, an improvised solution. And I think I get that from my dad. You know, my dad was just one of these cats that could fix anything. It didn't matter. Now, he didn't always fix it like with the most, you know, refined or elegant solution, but he could just fix everything. Engines, like you name it. If something goes wrong with a house. So I kind of came up with that. And that aptitude and intellectual curiosity would be a way to, you know, to frame it like, wow, I think I could fix that. And I, you know, during the 90s, we were doing a lot of deployments abroad under the Clinton administration, where we'd deploy into a country, ostensibly, you know, to do an operation, but then as often as not, the op wouldn't get green lit. We'd redeploy back to the States. The challenge was, you know, in the, on the state side, we have this world-class training facility, right? Cause I was, by that point in my career, I was at the counter-terror unit. This world-class training facility. And when you're stateside, great, you train like a pro athlete, right? But when you deploy, all that stuff would go away and you'd be back to kind of the times of the Romans, right? You're doing push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, star jumps and, you know, stuff that you would kind of traditional calisthenics, but you didn't always have access to do things to pull, right? Cause you didn't have pull-up bars. So depending on where you were, you may or may not be able to train really what the most important operational muscles are, the ability to climb up something, right? It's really the backside of your body where a lot of your power happens, not just the front side that looks good, right? And so front side, you can do push-ups and sit-ups, right? But backside of your body, how do you train that when you're in a place with no gear? So on one of those deployments, I had, as you and I were talking about, you know, I was involved in really the earliest time when jiu-jitsu came to the U.S., you know, back when the Gracies first opened their dojo in Torrance. Nobody really knew about it. And in the teams, we started bringing those guys to teach us, you know, stuff, because you'd show up as a wrestler. Like I actually showed up at the Torrance dojo as a wrestler and I had started kickboxing in college and just got thumped by those guys. Right. And I was like, wait a minute, I got to learn more about that, because if this little dude that I'm rolling with is tying me up in knots and has me tapping, you know, like I'm a member of a band, you know, I gotta learn more about that. And so we started bringing guys in to teach us basic fundamentals of grappling. And then eventually it evolving. And by the time that I was at the counter-terror unit, you know, there were, you could find dojos, and I managed to, with my travels coming and going, I'd managed to get up to a, you know, a fairly senior blue belt level. And one of these ops, I had grabbed we would always wear flight suits, right? For when you're not on operation, but you're together and you're planning, you know, you're inside your forward operating base or wherever you were. Wear flight suits. And so I grabbed this flight suit off my cage, stuffing it in a bag, and I accidentally scooped up my blue belt. And I ended up, you know, over in Asia, sitting in this place waiting for this operation to either go or not go. And I was staring, I can remember it like it was yesterday, sitting on a cot, staring at this blue belt that I'd accidentally thrown in my gear. And we were stuck there, you know, what was going to be a few days turned into a couple of weeks, and everybody was bitching and moaning about not being able to work out. And I just had this like idea, hey, I wonder if I tie a knot in the end of this blue belt and I go throw it over that bathroom door. I wonder, because the op that we were there to do was a underway shipboarding, you know, counter-piracy operation where you have to climb up the side of a ship on a caving ladder. And as a fairly big guy, you know, because most SEALs are a little leaner and meaner than, you know, I'm 6'2", and at the time was probably about 215. So I needed to do my pull-ups. Like I needed to make sure that I could get my big ass up, whatever it is that I was, you know, needed to climb. And that was the inspiration. The inspiration was, hey, how do I do this motion where I'm climbing up a ladder with my hands and feet? How can I train the upper body? And I walked over, and this is since you've been a long time TRXer, I'll bet you don't know the answer to this question, right? The first move ever on the TRX was, it was what today we call a power pull, right? The power pull is a one-handed exercise where you reach up high, then you lean back and let your body fall away, and then you rotate back up, right? And if you think about that, Chad, it looks a lot like this, climbing a ladder, right? And today we also call that whole approach functional training movements in the training room that mimic movements that you need for life or for your sport. And in this case, I wanted the climbing movement. And I went over and grabbed this jiu-jitsu belt, threw it over the top of the door, leaned back, pulled myself up, leaned back again, pulled myself up, right? Switched hands, did the other side. I was like, damn, that's pretty cool. That really works. you know, no handle, no nothing. And then I thought, well, what if I tied a knot in the middle? And I threw that over the door. Now I could grab both sides. All of a sudden I could be doing rows. I could do curls, you know, and that was literally how it started. And then I tried, then I got the idea, well, wait, could I do a fly? Except my wingspan was too wide. Right. So then I was like, all right, went over and rummaged around in our extra gear box and pulled out a reel of webbing that we would use to repair parachute harnesses and for all kinds of other stuff. And I cut about 6 feet off of that, tied it in the middle, tied the knot in the end of it, threw it over the door. And all of a sudden now I had all this standoff from the door. Right. And I could do a backfly. And then I was like, wait, what if I turn around? I could do a press. I could do a chest fly. I could do, you know, pullovers. I could do tricep extensions. And it just literally went from there, man, into what was really a Cro-Magnon version of the TRXs that you have in your wrestling room today. You know, it didn't have any adjustments, didn't have any handles, just an upside down Y, right? And that was the spark of inspiration that then, you know, I still didn't think of it as a business, but as an officer, it was kind of cool to have created this. You know, the guys in my squadron would call it the gizmo. Hey, boss, make me one of your gizmos. And you know, it was, I thought it was kind of fun that guys wanted me to make these for them. And there was a rigger out in the parachute loft like beer. So I went and, you know, basically said, hey, if these guys get you a case of beer, will you make one of them for them? And so that was the beginning of what became, you know, a number of years later, TRX.
That's amazing. And then just thinking about you going through the whole thought process of like all the various exercises you can do. And I wouldn't have guessed that. So I call that the matrix, by the way. So that power pull, call it the matrix. Cause as you're falling, as you're reaching back, it looks like
the matrix. It does look like that. Yeah, you're right.
And I would have guessed like the row, right? Cause that's like one of our most basic and best exercises on the TRX is to be able to do your TRX row. So that is crazy. You know, and for those listening who don't know about TRX, you can jump on their website, you can jump on YouTube, you can watch all kinds of videos. But I tell you what, I've trained professional athletes all the way down through middle school kids. My boys are in elementary. They do some TRX stuff with us. And, what I love about it is you can have anyone, right? So we have some special needs students in class that I go over and I help them train on the TRX. So we start to work through, a lot of times our therapist actually comes in and we work through TRX stuff. And then I can take a professional athlete and they can leave our weight room or wrestling room on what I call spaghetti legs, right? Where they can barely walk. And these are guys that are big, strong, freak athletes, but they're not used to training in that way. So you could train anyone on it. You can train full body on it. You can, you know, pick specific body parts, but I don't know, my dad used to do some bodybuilding. So as a lifelong weightlifting guy and someone who's done strength training forever, I don't know if I've ever found a better and more functional piece of equipment, right? And I've taken it to Mexico and put it around a palm tree on the beach and trained with it. You know, I've hooked it on a chain link fence and we've done all kinds of stuff. So this is awesome, man, being able to hear the genesis.
Well, now, you know, what's cool about that is, I mean, that is not what the, you know, I had no idea when I was starting this thing that was going to be the outcome, but that is an outcome that I hear a lot from a lot of smart guys like you who've been in training forever. It does. I mean, it's the simplest disruptive technology that you could ever imagine, right? It's literally 12 feet of nylon webbing, but the way that we put it together, and that took trial and error over time, right, to get it really optimized, it becomes, the way I like to describe it to trainers is that the TRX is like a magic wand. And once you've learned how to make it produce magic, you're a genius to your athletes, to your clients, to your patients, because it really does. It lets the training pro or the individual kind of paint whatever turns them on, right? In terms of an exercise movement. If your body can move a certain way, the suspension trainer will let you do that under a load. And I love some of the things that I find about the system that are the coolest of all, because they're so unexpected, is all the stuff for the legs, for the lower body, right? Like doing pistol squats, like for, you know, pistol squats are one of the hardest damn exercises that you can do. And using the straps, it lets you assist just enough, right, that you can get out of the bottom of a pistol squat. You can keep from falling over, because I know there are guys who can rep out pistol squats. Most of them are about, you know, 5'6" and built with like very sturdy lower bodies, right? Most of them are not taller, leaner guys, because obviously the longer your levers, the harder that things like pull-ups, push-ups, and pistol squats are. But the straps, you know, give you a way to assist. I mean, some of the baddest ass hamstring work you can do in the world is on that strap, right? You do hamstring curls leading with your hips there and stacking yourself up on your shoulders. Like, there ain't many people that can rep those things out for very long before their hams are just screaming at them.
Yeah. Yeah. You do some, we often combine hip presses and hamstring curls together on there, and legs are flat, just flat. Yeah,
That's evil. You're cramping up, you know, but it's, I like some of that stuff because you'd never guess that a strap that weighs a pound could train your lower body, you know, as if you had a full Olympic lifting set, you know, and three machines sitting there with you. But it's just, that's why we introduced the business with trainers and coaches, is that one of the things I realized pretty early on was, unless you have some knowledge and the desire, right, to create cool exercise movements for clients, the straps are just, you know, you'll grab them and you'll do some rows and you'll do some presses. But if you have a little bit of education, or you have a kind of one of those minds that likes to tinker and build and create, and you can take a set of straps and teach yourself. But unless you have some knowledge that was acquired one way or another, you know, you're probably not going to get anything close to what their potential is out of them. And that's why we built the business in partnership with trainers and coaches.
Yeah. So let's talk about the business. You know, I know you're very creative and you have a number of patents. It's not easy for people to break into the fitness world, you know? So I would say, because of functional strength training, we've seen an introduction of a lot more, and whether it's just looking at something like all the different type of rollers that are out there, right? We're talking foam rollers or all those different type of rollers. You can go to Walmart now and see a whole bunch of those. But it's still not easy to break into. I mentioned earlier, you know, you got a barbell, you got dumbbells, you got kettlebells, pull-up bars, we got squat racks, those type of things. So how did you build the business? How did you scale the business? And I think one of the things I've thought about is, like, was there a point where you're like, I think we can really make this work? Like, we can make this thing go.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't thinking of it as a business until, you know, I was promoting out of the field in the SEAL teams. And I had a really originally only planned to do 4 years and then back to business school. That was kind of my plan. But I kept, you know, incredible opportunities put in front of me. So I stuck around for 14 and some change. And then, you know, I my wife at the time was like completely done with the superhero gone 9 months a year, you know, lifestyle, which you can blame. I mean, it's a tough business to have families in, and, you know, guys struggle with those conflicts because you're gone all the time. Right. And you're doing stuff that's risky, and it's just a tough environment. So I decided, all right, well, I'm promoting out of the field. I had an opportunity to apply to business school at Stanford. I frankly didn't think I'd get in, but if I did, then that seemed like a good moment to pivot to my next thing. And damned if that year they didn't decide they wanted a SEAL on the recruiting poster, and they let me in despite my scores. And so I ended up at Stanford Business School. And I started training out in the athlete training center. And I would, by that point, I was just a diehard on my straps, right? So here I am in a world-class training center at the business school. I mean, at the university, not at the business school, at the university. And I go out there, hook up my straps to one of the Olympic, you know, racks, and bang out these just fierce workouts. And over a period of time, all the coaches who would be in there with their squads, you'd be like, you'd be in there with the wrestling team, right? Come walking over and say, like, all right. Like, and usually they'd ask me two things. First one would be like, what are you doing in here? Why are you so old? Because at that point I was like 36, right? And I was an old man compared to all the 18 to 20 year olds, right, that are running around. And then they'd quickly pivot to like, what is this thing? Can I try it? And another 10 minutes later, they'd be saying, hey, could you make me some of these? Because these would be incredible for my team. Well, over time, that team was every team at the university, from the swimmers to the sprinters, to the linemen on the football team, the basketball player. And, you know, you're at business school, thinking about business. I thought, damn, I wonder if there's a business in this. And so I turned my second year into an incubator where I really did some deep thinking and planning and some market research and discovered like, yeah, there's nothing like this out there in the world. And the question was not whether it was good, right? By that point, I knew how good this thing was. And I knew that elite athletes would be all over it because that's where I came from. I came from that world, right? What I didn't know was whether any normal person would think this was a good idea, right? And there's so many alternatives. You threw out just a few of them, right? There's so many alternatives to get your fitness from. But I decided, you know, if I'm ever going to take an entrepreneurial leap of faith at 30, 36, 37, I had about one, you know, opportunity in me before I had to go get a respectable job. And so I figured, all right, well, I'm coming out of business school. Let me take a swing at this thing and see if I can build a business. And back then I had some advantages. Like, remember today, I mean, this is an important point that I always tell, you know, when I'm talking to entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs, I always tell them this. The world's a little different today with the internet because the market is so fast and there are so many like knockoff companies out there in the world that's how they do their business. I don't think it's particularly honorable, but it's a reality. They, you know, there are hundreds of Stitch and Sew shops in southern China that all they do is scour the internet and try to find products that seem to be selling. And then they go knock them off. And with Amazon, you know, they can set up their own shop, a fulfillment by Amazon, so that they can make, you know, 500 units, have their nephew set up their shop on Amazon, and they're in business. And then they do a little bit of bidding on your keyword, your trademark, and they end up, Amazon puts them right next to you. Right. When if you go and you search TRX on Amazon, all these knockoffs will show up right next to you and they do their best to make it look like it's identical.
Yeah.
And it's tough. You know, it's a tough market to bring new products into. I mean, I brought something that if you haven't seen it yet, I got to get you a set because I created it during the pandemic. And it's one of the coolest damn things that we've done in a long time called the Bandit. And all it is a handle for that pops over any strength band, right? But when you think about training with elastic resistance, there's a ton of goodness that you can get out of elastic resistance. The experience tends to be pretty crappy because it doesn't feel good, right? You grab like a flat strength band, especially the heavier you go, the worse it feels. It pinches your skin. It doesn't load evenly on your palm, right? It's just not a great experience. And I got to, again, the MacGyver in me got to looking at, because TRX now carries pretty much every functional training tool that you would probably want to torture your kids with, right? Like everything, ropes, sticks, straps, bands, you know, bells. And I got to think, well, why are we selling these things when nobody I know likes to use them? Right. And then I did some research and discovered like, well, actually it doesn't feel good. Like that's the answer. It just doesn't feel good. So I thought, well, I can fix that. Let me come up with an idea. And I went out and cut like 12 inches of PVC pipe, routed a groove down the middle, cut that in half. And what did I have? 2 6-inch handles with a groove in them, popped them over the bands. And all of a sudden, wow, like 100% better experience, you know, loads evenly, the bands kind of run through them and auto equalize. Obviously that was just the starting point because those things would cut right, you know, sharp edge on a piece of PVC would cut right through the band. But we ended up spending some time to figure out, all right, how do we turn this into a product that, you know, has beveled edges and a good grip? Well, that product is an unbelievably good product. It took 2 weeks for the first knockoff to appear. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks after we launched, we had some guys out of Eastern Europe knocking us off with a hand milled metal version, right? Because they obviously had access to a steel shop, a metal shop. And so, and then it got on Amazon, and it's kind of crazy that way. And the reason I tell you that story is just because if you have folks that are listening and they're thinking about, you know, about doing a product, it's not, I'm not here to say don't do it. I'm just here to say, really do your homework. You gotta take the time and pain to get your intellectual property protected, because if you don't, all that happens is that you become the sales and marketing arm for a bunch of scummy knockoff guys that will come eat your lunch before you've established much of a business. And that, you know, that didn't exist as much 20 years ago when I was getting going with TRX. So I had some advantages, but that's how I got it started. And then the first order customer was coaches and trainers. And that was because I had this thing that was at some level counterintuitive, right? It's the first time that you ever touched the straps, you probably were like scratching your head a little bit going, well, all right, I see a couple things, but like, why would I bother? It doesn't have any weights on it. It doesn't stretch, you know? And I realized pretty quickly that, man, like I need guys and gals who understand fitness, who understand human movement, who understand, you know, the principles of exercise physiology and kinesiology. Well, who is that? Well, it's trainers and coaches and physical therapists. All right, let's go sell them, give them a new tool that they can use to build their businesses, right? To deliver results to their clients. And if I do this right, they'll become not only my customer, they'll become my ambassador. Right. And you're a perfect example, man. You are like the textbook example of what I hoped would happen with that strategy. And that's kind of how we started. I probably did 500. I'll bet you, Chad, I did 500 presentations free in gyms and athlete training centers in the first 3 years, where I just show up with a bag full of, you know, backpack full of straps. And I'd go in and I'd beg whoever was in charge to give me a half hour with their training staff. And I promised to leave a couple behind, and that was it, man. It was like one gym and one group of trainers at a time over the first 36, 48 months.
I'm glad you brought up all those points about the knockoffs, because I've seen the TRX knockoffs, right? And they're just not the same. First off, they're not. I've trained on TRX for a long time. I've been to other places that had some of the knockoffs, and it's just not the same. But I love that, you know, you had your product, you believed in it, knew it was going to work, and then you just ran with it, right? And that's something that I think a lot of people, it's sort of the whole like ready, aim, and then they never fire, right? So, and then some people are like, fire, ready, aim, you know, they just go. But, you know, you did your due diligence, but then you took the action steps, right? You put in the work. And I've never met anyone successful in any arena that didn't have to put in work. And you did that. I know for me, like, I saw it on a video, didn't know what it was called. It was a jiu-jitsu instructional video. So I think it was like a St. Pierre video or something he was in. It was like hanging in the background, black and yellow strap. And I was like, what is that thing? And I'm like Googling it. And I found it. I ordered one. I brought it in. I started playing around with it. I kept one of my most elite athletes. He actually ended up making it to the NFL, but you know, he's just this freak athlete. So after rest on practice, I'm like, hey, let's do some of these exercises, and we're trying it. And then I had another real good athlete in there, like, and he does an atomic push-up and like face plants, you know? And I'm like, okay, we got to figure this thing out. And so we did. And again, this is a long time ago, so it was easier to access sometimes, but I friended you. I looked up the company. I friended you on Facebook. Sent you a message. Hey, I'm a middle school PE teacher. We have a $500 a year budget. We don't have a weight room. I want to do strength conditioning with my athletes. or my students, how do I do this? And I'm a high school wrestling coach. We fundraise for everything. You said, hey, I'm going to put you in charge, or I'm going to put you in touch with my guy that's in charge of education. So you connected me with Tim Burke. And from there, you know, we were able to start getting TRXs. And over the years, we've gotten more and collected them. And, you know, we run a full-blown program with our middle school kids and then with our high school athletes of every sport. And it works absolutely phenomenal. But that's what made me a fan. And then I went and did classes and became a certified TRX trainer and all those type of things, you know. But to be able to just see the vision and have the guts to go for it and then the ability to grind through it has turned out to, you guys are one of the biggest fitness companies in the world. You know, and like you said, I mean, you guys have not just TRXs, but you have medicine balls, you have kettlebell, you have everything.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I'm at an interesting point now because I sold control of TRX to some private equity guys back in 2018. And I wanted to, my goal was to go and, you know, if you can see me on video, I'm wearing an Outfit t-shirt. I'm a startup guy, right? So I love the idea of see a problem or an opportunity and kind of do your diligence on it a little bit, figure it out. And then I just love taking things from concept to reality. That's what makes me tick. And so, you know, I sold control to these finance guys. And one of the things that it's become really, really clear to me in a short period of time, because I stuck around with the company through the end of 2020, when, you know, we had our biggest, not surprisingly, we had our biggest year in history because of the pandemic, right? Yeah. We, as a company that obviously the commercial side of our business, clubs and athletic training facilities, got flattened, but the consumer side went over the moon, right? And so we had a huge year. And at that point, you know, if I won't get too deep into the details, but let's just say that we had very different visions of how to run, you know, a company and how to build a brand. And I ultimately decided, you know, I don't really want to be associated with these guys. I peeled off and went over to start something new. Well, in a very short period of time, those guys drove the business into the dirt. And the reason that they did wasn't, you know, it wasn't, I mean, whatever my opinion is of them, like what I realized in retrospect is that the kind of care and feeding and passion, right, that I had for this business and that all my early teams had, that is really required to get something off the ground and get it to grow. Because like hearing, you know, I can tell you for sure. I mean, obviously we have a lot of customers. I don't remember our first interaction, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Like that's exactly what I would have done. I would have spent the time with you, heard what your circumstance was, tried to figure out how we could help. And we're a little company too. It wasn't like we were, you know, it wasn't like we were rolling in dough, trust me. But handed you over to one of my best guys who ran all of our education accounts, right? All of our schools. And then I know, because I know Tim, he would have broken his back to like get you, even if he had to go get like returns, put them in a box and ship them to you for free. That's what would have happened. And like the reason I think it's worth mentioning this is because that's the kind of like care and diligence and passion that you really have to have to start a business. If you don't have that, you should go to work for a big business that already exists, right? And just go, you know, kind of do your job, do it well, and live a good life. Because if you want to start something, if you want to keep it going, like you've got to have that kind of passion for it. And what happens a lot when founders and founding teams peace out on a business is exactly what happened to TRX, right? It just, the soul got sucked out of it, and it became this very transactional business, like all about e-com, all about digital marketing. Well, that shit don't work. That is not what builds a great brand and builds passionate fans around your brand.
Yeah.
You've got to give, and you've got to care, and you've got to be just like, ruthless about meeting your own standards and clearing those every freaking time. And where you screw something up, because you will, you got to fall all over yourself to make it right. Right. And the second you lose that kind of focus on your customers and on making their experiences successful, you're dead. And now, right now, I'm sitting with another group getting ready to go back and buy back, you know, the company that I founded 20 years ago, you know, out of bankruptcy because these finance geniuses drove this thing into bankruptcy. Now it's still functioning and it's not, you know, to the customer, you probably don't see it because a lot of this is like behind the scenes business, capital structure, you know, all of that. But it was a real like shocking thing to me that this business that's like steady as a rock for almost 20 years in the space of 18 months was driven into bankruptcy, right? By guys that didn't understand any of the things that we're talking about right now,
yeah.
Right? And so, you know, out of every crisis, there's an opportunity, right? I get to go back now, hopefully I've got some really, really good partners that understand some of the things that we're talking about. We're going to go back and get the old gang back together. Hopefully we'll be successful at our effort to buy it, you know, at the auction. And then, you know, you're going to see TRX, frankly, reach greater heights than it ever was before, because now I know a lot more than I knew when I started this thing, right? Like you learn as you go along, and for the first time in, geez, at least 12 years, the business clean of investor weight, right, is how I would call it. Like the cosmic weight that having institutional investors involved in a business, it's heavy, and it oftentimes pulls businesses off their tracks, just as it did for TRX. But that passion, you know, and I still obviously have it. Like I could talk TRX all day long and sing the praises and you know, show up to help any of our clients build their new gym, right? Because that's what you do if you want to build long-term relationships and build a lot of love for your brand.
That, which brings me to, you know, principles of success. People that listen to the show hear me say this all the time, but principles are principles and they apply almost anywhere once you know them, right? So sort of, you know, universal principles. Passion is one of those things, man. You can't fake passion. I hear it in your voice when you talk about it, right? So you can't fake that. Like, that's real. I can feel it. Relationships. You know, as a coach, my number one job is build relationships with my athletes before any of the X's and O's, right? Before anything else, we build relationships. The coaches that cared about me, to this day, I love them and would run through a wall for them, you know, so we built relationships. I think every business is that way. So what are some of the universal principles that you've learned along the way? And I'm sure that, you know, you can equate a lot of these with like things that made you successful as an officer in the SEAL team, and then also things that allowed you guys to grow TRX.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I realized in retrospect that literally all the things that I learned about business leadership, I actually learned in the SEAL teams. Right. They apply directly because they are, as you say, they're universal. They're, you know, we got to remember we're in the anthropology business, right? We deal with humans. Like, no matter what we do, we're in the anthropology business. And those constants have been around for a long time. I mean, Homo sapiens haven't changed much in 100,000 years, right? And recorded history goes back, what, maybe 5,000? So like these, there are universal principles, and they're, you know, I think a couple of them are the ones that you mentioned already. If you're going to go after something, you better believe in it, be passionate about it, because there's going to be a lot of adversity that's going to test your commitment. And and that passion for the idea, for the product, for the team is going to carry you through. Authenticity, man, like this is one of the things that I can't say enough about it. People will forgive you a lot of shortcomings, right? You can have knowledge gaps. You can have performance gaps. You can have character flaws, right? But people will forgive you because they have their own. What they won't forgive is inauthenticity, right? Like someone who is a poser, who is saying something that's different than what they're doing, who's espousing principles that they don't live themselves, right? Like, nobody likes a hypocrite, no one. And the second that, and people are smart, right? Like there's sometimes in business, there's this bizarre sense that the people at the top are, you know, are oh so smart, and that the rank and file are just dummies that are there to get a paycheck. Like, that is garbage. The people all throughout my organizations were every bit as smart or smarter than me, and having the privilege, right, to lead them is an awesome responsibility. Yeah. And you need to take it that way. And you need to realize that, like, if people are willing to follow you, man, that is a gift. That's something that you have to earn, and you have to earn it every day. You don't earn it once because you got called the CEO or you got a promotion in the military. You have to earn it every single day you walk out there. Like, you being a coach, you know, if you stop living your principles as a coach, you watch how what happens to your team. Yeah. Right? It will disintegrate and disappear before you can blink. Because people, if they're gonna follow somebody, they want to know that person is a good human, is telling them the truth, is living authentically, like they believe in the stuff that's coming out their mouth. And to me, those are, I mean, it's kind of, you know, in some respects, it's like, you know, we all learned in kindergarten, you know, the golden rule. Those are principles that really matter. And they are the keys to success. And then when you add a few more, like, you know, you do have to have a certain thickness of skin. You got to be able to, you know, to take the ups and the downs, right? And because both of those are kind of imposters, right? They're short. Victory and defeat, it's all a short-term imposter. It's the victory rewarded some things that were earned and worked, you know, for a point in time. But as every great coach knows, defeat is inevitable. Like, in every game, there's going to be a winner and a loser, and you ain't going to win all the time. You may win for a while, but what happens when you lose, right? Does everything fall apart and your belief in yourself and your principles evaporates? Well, then you're screwed, right? Yeah. Then you're done. Like, no, you just have to kind of realize that life is a series of oscillations. Some of them take you upward. Some of them take you downward. None of them last, right? So having that kind of perspective that, all right, you know, this too shall pass, whether it's good or whether it's bad, like, never forget that. And then you don't have those, you know, you don't have those like euphoric moments that are out of perspective, nor do you have the defeats that just break your soul. Right. And all of that, I think, comes from being authentic, being passionate, doing your homework, you know, working hard. It's those basic principles that, you know, probably all our grandparents would have told us, you know, when we were little kids. But living them is easy to say, but hard to do.
Yeah, that's very good, man. That is all that is right on the money. You know, everything I've experienced as an athlete, everything I've experienced as a coach, you know, all those things you just said right there. So wonderful. All right. So as we get ready to sort of round this out, I always kind of ask a couple questions at the end. One real fast is, what is your genius? Okay. If I were to say, hey, Randy, here's a God-given gift, but you've also developed it and used it, and you're just good at this thing, man. What is your genius?
Man, I'd be hard pressed to call myself a genius in anything, Chad. I'm a student of a lot. I guess, you know, small g and genius, it's, I don't know if I could say one. I think it'd be two. One is that kind of fundamental resourcefulness that I was talking about. Like I'm just kind of the, you know, people ask me, like, hey, what are your two, you know, your two secret traits? And I always tell them I'm as resourceful as a coyote and as tenacious as a cactus plant, right? I just don't quit. I keep coming. And so that resourcefulness is one of them. And the other one, you know, that I know I learned in the SEAL teams is I seem to have an aptitude for pulling together good people and keeping them together. You know, that seems to be my gift, if you will. You know, and it ain't easy, and I don't always do it perfectly. Don't mistake that. But it's over the course of a career, right? That seems to be the thing that I have a gift for is articulating a vision to folks and getting them to believe in it and come in and roll up their sleeves and get after it. Not because you know, you're paying them so much or they are guaranteed to get rich, but because they believe in it and they want to be part of it. And yeah. So, you know, those two things, I guess, would, when you put them together, are kind of, to the extent that I've enjoyed a little bit of success, those are the keys to it: resourcefulness and the ability to build good teams.
Excellent. All right. You can pick one of these, and this will be our last question. Tell me about a highlight, a hardship, or a hero in your life. Highlight, hardship, or hero.
Wow. Let's see. Well, I've had so many good mentors that it's hard for me to pick one hero. Cause man, is that an important thing for all your listeners, is like mentors, get yourself some good mentors.
Yeah.
And they will help you succeed and help you avoid, you know, pitfalls and potholes. I guess I would say that, if I picked would you say it was a highlight, a hero? What was the other one?
Hardship.
You know, hardships are always good ones to talk about, because everybody's going to have them. And, you know, I guess dealing with people passing away in my family, you know, is a hardship that I think is universal, because everybody, I mean, it's one of those things that 100% of us are going to get to experience, you know, unless we're the guy that passes away too early. And you know, that's one that I've been reflecting on recently, because I had my little sister died of brain cancer when she was 8. Mm. And that was like, I mean, man, that was savage to, you know, to the family, to everything. And then I had my grandmother died a couple of years ago at 6 months shy of 104. Oh, wow. And the interesting thing that I learned out of those is that obviously, you know, the 8-year-old is more tragic, because it was a life cut so short, and you just feel like, wow, it's so unfair. But the funny thing about, you know, having my grandmother die at 103 and a half is it was still pretty damn tragic. And it's funny. It's a funny part of the human condition, because you kind of think, well, geez, she lived 103 years. Like, what'd you expect? But it doesn't matter. It's still this like fundamentally important human being in your life that frankly was there with me from the time that I was born until I was 53. Right. And the interesting thing that I learned from her was that, you know, you don't want to, like, her point to me was, hey, the only things I regret in my 103 and a half years were the days that I spent in angst over what other people thought of me, you know, and what other people might think. And she said, I spent way too many days anguishing over what other people think. And she laughed and said, you know, and here I outlived them all, every one of them, right? They've all been gone, most of them for decades. And yet, you know, I allowed them to really, I allowed myself to waste some of my days. And she said, even 103, like, let me tell you how fast that life went. You know, it was a blink of an eye, right? And it was past. So, you know, even out of something like that, out of these tragedies, like, I learned some of my most important lessons. You know, it's the, my little sister, it's, man, live every day as if it's your last, right? Cause as the saying goes, one day you'll be right, and you never know when that day is going to come. And then for my grandmother, it was, man, like, don't, you know, try your best to be your own person, and not allow like other people's definition of success or failure to affect you too much.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, right, when our story's over, there's only one person you got to answer to, right, on that day, and it's yourself. Like, did I live my life fully? Was I a good person? Do I feel good about, you know, the kind of things that I did for the world? And did I waste time? You know, did I waste time? Because you can't get that time back. And so, you know, I think there's always out of every tragedy or out of every hardship, there's always stuff you can learn, and there's always something you can take away from that negative experience that you can turn into a positive.
That is good advice. Sometimes I ask, like, what advice would you give yourself right now in life? But that might be it right there, right? So that's wonderful.
That's probably it. Yeah, that's probably it. And at 56, right, you start to get a little more perspective, right? Because you've lived long enough that you've started to see patterns. You've seen, you know, you've seen even yourself. You've seen yourself do stupid things, you know, multiple times. And I think I'm getting a little more perspective, you know, as I head toward my sixth decade of life. Just that gives me some appreciation for trying to optimize what's out there, you know, what's left.
Man, and dude, I gotta say this. So for those who are just listening to this, I'm 44. I feel like I'm in pretty good shape. I train really hard, right? 56, like, I hope I look like you when I'm 56. You are a freak. You look like a Greek god, right? So you're still rocked out.
Okay? You're too kind, man. You're way too kind. Hey, I'm looking forward. You know what I'm really looking forward to is I've set this goal that by 60, I want to be done with the workaday life, and I want to finally have like my professional athletic career. Now, it'll be as a master's athlete, right? And the bar's lower, but I want to wake up every morning, think about what I'm going to do to train that day. What event am I going to go challenge myself with? Right. I took up surfing about your age, and I've become obsessed with longboarding. You know, I took up golf during the pandemic. And so, you know, I want to have my pro athletic career that I traded away for, you know, for a career in the SEAL teams, which was a pro athlete of a sort, yeah. But I still want to pick that baton up at 60 and run with it as long as I can.
That's absolutely awesome. And those are life goals right there, man. So absolutely life goals. I'm going to be right there on that same path with you. So, well, Randy, thank you so much for being on here, man. It's a blessing. Again, you know, from afar, you've impacted my life and the life of a lot of my athletes in a really positive way. And I want to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. That's what it's all about, man. I'm glad we could be a little tiny piece of your success. So happy to be on with you. And, you know, let me know. I'll come back when you're desperate for somebody to fill a session. I'll come back and do it again.
Real fast. How can we connect with you?
Oh, so you can follow me at Randy Hetrick, right, on Instagram, Facebook. New company, go follow at @outfittraining_HQ. That's pretty exciting new thing. We didn't talk about it, but go take a look at it. And then always you can follow TRX at TRX Training. So hope to, you know, let's stay in touch.
I will. And I will have those links in the show notes for anybody. You can click on those links and check them out. So again, thank you so much, Randy.
All right, Chad. My pleasure. Much continued success, brother.
Thank you. All right, everybody. It's been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, and give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey there, fam friends. Hey, when you get a second, go check out my friends over at BubsNaturals.com. So for me, I train really hard, right? I'm a lifelong wrestler and athlete. I'm a coach. I have a wonderful family. And because of that, I want to feel good. When you feel good, you're able to perform well. So when you train hard, you need to make sure that you're recovering the best you can. And I depend on Bubs Naturals collagen, their MCT oil powders, their apple cider vinegar gummies, which are delicious, by the way. So with their collagen and their MCT oil powder, I just throw those in my coffee first thing in the morning. I use a frother. It blends it up and it tastes delicious, right? So I'm getting my nutrition right off the bat. And if I'm not having coffee for the day, then I usually throw those in my protein shake. So with Bubs Naturals, this is an incredible company. They're on a mission. They have a mission. 10% of all of their profits go back to charity. Not many companies do that. So for those reasons, I support Bubs. Go over and check them out, and if you use the code COACHP20, that's COACHP20, you'll get a 20% discount on all their products. BubsNaturals.com.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new stick.